Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as a part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download the USA Today Sports Plus app from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus. Fan harder.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is the off-season, first real off-season edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I am joined, as always, by Nate Atkins, who is not entirely moved to Indianapolis yet. He's still a little bit in limbo as we head into the off-season. We don't have to worry. I don't think we have to worry about him backing out and trying to go elsewhere at this point. He's not quite in Indianapolis yet.
I was banking on the Colts having another game this week. Like, I'm guessing a lot of people. I guess that would have been last week, but I thought they'd either be in Cincinnati or Buffalo. My parents live in Columbus, and so it was sort of like, I'll just hang out here and go to wherever they're going, and then all of a sudden they weren't going anywhere, and so here we are, stranded.
But yeah, so Nate's still kind of mobile. I'm now in my office at home. Nothing in terms of like access this week, but it's been relatively newsy, particularly on the coaching and general manager front. I think we can start there. Matt Eberflus is now a finalist for two jobs, for Jacksonville Jaguars, for the Chicago Bears. He's going to get second interviews in both places. I don't know that he's kind of been in the mix for a couple of years. I don't know that I was expecting him to be a finalist for two jobs this quickly in this search process. But one of the things that I remember, I find out kind of every coaching cycle, is that what I think and how I think it might go doesn't usually end up being the way it's playing out. I don't think we were expecting Nick Sirianni to get hired last year either. So kind of an interesting thing that's right here on the horizon with the Colts maybe having a shift to defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I didn't know that he would be a finalist for two jobs either, especially the two that he is a finalist for are just kind of interesting because they're in very similar spots as two teams, the Bears and Jaguars, who just drafted quarterbacks in the top 10 and then fired their head coach. And both of those quarterbacks kind of had very shaky rookie seasons, Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville and Justin Fields in Chicago. And it would seem like usually what would seem like the wisest and most prudent thing to do would be, let's go find the offensive mind to get this back on the tracks and get this right. Because ultimately nothing's going to matter for those two franchises if they don't get those two right. So just kind of interesting that Eberflus is a candidate for those jobs. And I mean, credit to him because he's obviously earned a reputation over the past 4 years as defense coordinator of the Colts and what he is as a leader to be in that spot. And maybe, maybe for example, like with Justin Fields, there are certain quarterbacks I think can work with a defensive head coach when the quarterback is that sort of different, that sort of out of structure. And again, that would rely on Justin Fields hitting the ceiling. But I think about like Russell Wilson with Pete Carroll, why that worked for so many years is that like Russell is the offense there. And so Pete Carroll could be the defense. And it was a great pairing for a long time, even though now it's kind of run its course. But like you said, how we think that hiring should go is not usually how it goes, because these people making the decision at the end of the day are owners who are business people who think in very different ways than just, looking at football track records and football fit. And I can say, especially from having covered the Bears, they will never think the way that football fans will, because they're at best sort of lukewarm fans. They're not really football savvy people, and they'll always kind of go for different traits. And I do think that Eberflus has a lot in common with Lovie Smith, who, as time has gone on, people there miss Lovie Smith, because while he didn't end up winning a Super Bowl, he did get them to one consistent playoff winner, and they kind of miss those days of at least being relevant.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Lovie Smith connection is a good point, because Lovie and Eberflus go way back. That's where Eberflus learned his defense, was from Smith. A lot of it was when Lovie Smith was in Chicago, was Eberflus driving up there in the offseason to learn the defense. Now, the defense has obviously shifted a ton since then. They run a much more multiple set, but that there's that connection. I think one of the things that maybe people don't think about as much with Eberflus as a candidate is that once he gets in these interviews, just what we know of him from doing interviews with him, he talks a lot about things like culture, you know, details, preparation, some of this intangible stuff that I think ends up coming through a little bit more than, you know, usually the way I look at it, or the way most of us, most writers look at it, most people around football look at it, is how successful is the unit that they're coordinating, you know? Whereas I think a lot of times when owners are trying to make a hire, they're thinking more about things like culture and fit and establishing a program, that kind of thing. I think that's sometimes where people, I think that's probably a lot of times where people get in trouble making these hires. But it's also one of those things with, it's also one of those things, we cover an owner in Indianapolis who I think is different than almost any other owner in the NFL in that he played football at SMU. He was a GM. He was a general manager for a long time in the NFL. He's steeped in football history, obsessed with football. Irsay makes, for the most part, football decisions, you know? And like you said, when you're dealing with an owner who doesn't do that, especially when there's no GM there to sort of guide the search. There's no GM in Chicago right now. They're doing those interviews concurrently. There's no GM to kind of guide the search. It's just up to these guys who maybe aren't that steeped in it. Not saying that Matt Eberflus isn't a good candidate, just saying that if for people who are a little bit surprised that maybe the Bears aren't going for an offensive mind. I think that's the biggest thing, is like people assume Chicago would be, I think most people assume Chicago and Jacksonville will both just be like, we're just going to interview offensive coordinators and quarterback people and not move on from there. But kind of going into why some of these things happen is that's not necessarily the way that these owners think. You covered the Bears, so you have a better idea than McCaskey's. All I know is that like a week ago, George McCaskey sat down in front of a bunch of reporters and said he wasn't really a football guy. So, which is, that's got to be a terrible spot to be in as a fan.
Yeah, Wes, I talked to George one-on-one one time. I asked him, they were in a similar spot when they were hiring John Fox. And I asked him do you plan to take kind of a hands-on role with that position? He said, no, I think most Bears fans would love if I'm nowhere near the football decision. So I'm not going to be. In some ways, it's refreshing for him to kind of come out and admit that he doesn't know things. But at the same time, it's like, well, we need somebody to know things, though. And you don't tend to find those people. So it is an interesting setup there. I will say the other thing that always seems to happen with these coaching searches is that when a tenure goes wrong and you fire a coach, owners love to just like get the polar opposite of that
coach. Go the other way. Yep.
And so like they just think like, oh, that didn't work, so we got to fix it by the absolute polar opposite. So in Jacksonville, you know, they had a billion discipline issues, as we know, Urban Meyer and all the different stories that came out there. So Matt Eberflus is known as a guy for four straight years here has run a pretty tight ship, and they don't really have communication issues, and that's one of his strengths. And then for Chicago, they tried the whole young and up and coming offensive coordinator as a head coach in Matt Nagy, and it didn't do anything for their offense. And it kind of made it so that, you know, he kept taking control of an offense, and the defense was good, but it was like the offense didn't go anywhere. So I could see them thinking, well, let's get back to our roots as this defensive city, and let's just get a guy who can hand the whole keys of an offense to an offense coordinator, which is what Matt Nagy never did. So it's getting kind of in the weeds, but Eberflus has somehow kind of become the opposites of these two things. And especially Jackson, I guess they kind of both go the same way. I think they both have to hire offensive coaches because, like I said, nothing will matter if Fields and Lawrence aren't really good and stable. And it's very hard when you're that young to work through that unless you have stability. But, you know, it's good for Eberflus, and he's got two shots and he's trying to get one of them.
I also think,
and I know he really wants it too.
I also think he's probably been better in Indianapolis than people give him credit for. They've been top 10 in scoring three of his 4 years. They've been top 10 in turnovers every year which is really tough to do. Turnovers tend to be random. Yeah. It's really hard to be consistently good at creating turnovers. They've done that. I'm not saying there's not weaknesses with the development, like the pass rush, the way the defensive ends have developed. There's been some weaknesses with zone coverage and not being able to adapt to that. There's been weaknesses in the defense, but overall, he took a defense that was awful for basically the entire 2010s up until he got to Indianapolis and turned it into something respectable. I wouldn't characterize it as an elite defense by any means, because it's not the sort of defense that dictates to people. The pass rush has never been good enough for them to dictate to opposing quarterbacks what they can and can't do. That's an elite defense. But it's been a good defense. It's been a solid defense. It's kind of in that next tier of defenses. And he's done a good job with that. And I think that some of the stuff that he does, you know, he's always talking about alignment, assignment, key, technique, detail oriented, that kind of thing. That stuff plays well in these interviews. Obviously, also, he's been in these interviews for a couple of years now. So his name is in circles. There's clearly some respect from him within league circles. It'll be interesting to see what the Colts do at defensive coordinator if Eberflus does, in fact, get a head coaching job. One thing that I thought was interesting, I asked Ballard, Chris Ballard, point blank. Ballard, I think, regardless of what happens, will have a big say if Eberflus leaves, because the defense is kind of his baby too. And Frank's an offensive-minded head coach. But one of the things that I asked Ballard point blank if they needed to have someone from the exact same coaching tree, that same Tampa 2 coaching tree, and he said no, not necessarily. He said his whole thing with 3-4 versus 4-3 is that you end up in a four front anyway because of how much nickel everybody plays. So he did say that. But four-man fronts is a wide range of potential defensive coordinators. And the Tampa 2 coaching tree is not as big as you might think it is, especially with coordinator type people. So it's interesting to think about all the possibilities of where they could go.
Yeah, no, I think there would be a lot on the table internally, externally. It would be kind of interesting. I could see Ballard having a bigger role in that, because he's always felt like he's, you know, I was asking him about this at the presser. He's so proud of the turnovers and how they find a way to scout certain players to fit a scheme that sets them up for turnovers. And it worked in Chicago, and it's worked in Indianapolis, and it doesn't carry over in many other places, but they feel like it carries over. And so I think he's still going to, well, he's going to be open-minded to a few different schemes. That's still going to be kind of at the front of his mind, as coaches whose schemes and teaching styles kind of lend themselves to turnovers. And so you could see a few different directions. I mean, like they've got guys on staff like Alan Williams, you know, the secondary coach, is I think one of the most underrated assistants in the league. I covered him in Detroit. He did worlds good there for Darius Slay and Glover Quinn, and now he's here with, you know, turned Kenny Moore into a Pro Bowler. And, you know, we saw the growth of Rockison and Isaiah Rogers, and those guys are getting turnovers. They're playing in a way where they're confident enough to get their hands on the ball and stay in phase. There's Alan Williams' boss in Detroit, by the way, Terrell Austin, I thought, runs a very similar scheme to what Eberflus does with the cover two shell. He ran lots of two high safeties. It's kind of his thing. He's currently with the Steelers as a secondary coach, kind of flamed out as a defense coordinator with the Bengals, but had a great run in Detroit for what they had there. So could be those guys. I mean, there's big names that could end up on the market, like Vic Fangio that are on the market. Vic Fangio and Mike Zimmer, I think both are, you know, different fits for this team. I'll say in a few ways, I think would be a stretch, but if you wanted to really go for it and say, we're just going to bring in a guy who we're going to give the whole defense to them. You just handle the defense and you do your thing and we'll trust your track record. And those two would be absolutely at the top of the list. So there's a few different ways it can go. Another guy that I think, based on how some dominoes fall, is going to be a lot of teams' radars is Sean Desai, the coordinator in Chicago, who might be just kind of left out, but he was a Vic Fangio disciple. Seahawks are already interested in him. He's been a rising star for years, so they've got a few different options.
Yeah, I wonder if Jim Schwartz maybe gets in it. He said he was stepping away from coaching after his time in Philadelphia. And he's, I think he's in a consultant role with Tennessee, but obviously a guy that Frank Reich knows pretty well. He's got a pretty good history with defensive lines too, which is, I would say, the weak point of this defense at this point. So that's another name that I wonder if would be involved. All of this is a moot point until Eberflus gets hired as a head coach somewhere. But it's interesting to think, you know, what could go on beyond that, because if the defensive coordinator gets hired somewhere, he's going to take some guys with him on his staff, I would assume. And then the new defensive coordinator is going to want to bring people in. So if that move happens, I think there's probably a domino effect with the coaching staff where you get a lot of different faces in next year.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to see them have that kind of change and how they deal with it, because they haven't really had it, you know, for a while. They've had the same defense coordinator every year under Frank Reich, which is pretty rare for a team that's had a winning record in that span. A lot of continuity on that side of the ball, and it's helped certain players kind of come from unheralded backgrounds, whether that's, you know, Kenny Moore. Kind of everyone in the secondary feels that way. Kenny Moore, Rocky Sin, and Isaiah Rogers are all small school guys who started out, you know, not the best and got a lot better. So it'd be some rare turnover on that side of the ball, but, you know, we may see it on both sides of the ball a little bit more than I think people are expecting.
There's also the possibility of some front office movement. I think as long as Ballard is there, I don't necessarily know if that's as big a deal. I know people really like Ed Dodds. He pulled out of the Bears search earlier today. Reportedly pulled out of the Bears search. I haven't been able to confirm that yet. He's also potentially a candidate in Las Vegas. I would say that, given Dodds' profile and how much he's interviewed over the last couple of years, if he leaves, I think Ballard already knows what he's going to do. You know, we asked him about this, about him and Morocco Brown getting interviewed at the postseason press conference. And he said they're going to be GMs. It's just a matter of when. They're both going to be patient with it, which is very smart. Dodds not taking just any old job is smart, because even more so than coach, I think you only get one shot at GM for most people. Because teams tend to hang on to GMs longer than coaches. But he's known that these guys had a chance of losing it for a while, and or of leaving for a while. So I think he probably knows what he's going to do there. Like I said, it's not as big a deal as a defensive coordinator. Defensive coordinator is such a big deal just because Frank Reich is an offensive mind and the offensive coordinator. Ballard is definitely going to have a significant say in that. He's a big part of the reason that Eberflus is here. He's thought of as McDaniel's hire, but it was really a McDaniel's and Ballard hire. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I don't know what the timetable is. It's hard to know what the timetable is for any of these coaching moves, because the Bears have already scheduled a second interview with Eberflus, and I don't think they're done with their first interviews yet.
And it also depends on kind of how things shake out in the playoffs. You know, like Brian Daboll is the guy that I think Chicago should go ahead and hire. He's a guy that got the most out of Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs in this cold weather city. And that could fit a lot of Justin Fields and Darnell Mooney in that cold weather city. But they have to wait and see how that plays out. And I mean, this is the weird type of year. It's like the candidates who go further in the playoffs sometimes are at the disadvantage, all going back to the issue the Colts ran into with McDaniels, is people don't want to run into that again. And so it's just rare that the coaches who last in the conference championship weekend end up getting these head coaching jobs, because how long do you wait to let the dominoes start falling? And you saw, like, once Eberflus got a second interview with the Jaguars, then all of a sudden he had one with the Bears. Like these teams are competing together and trying to make sure they have enough options they like out there. And, you know, so a lot of it's going to depend. Like, if the Bills get knocked out this weekend, you may see Daboll get hired, and that may just kind of settle a lot of things. And if they win and they keep going, then who knows?
On a player front, I don't know that a ton has happened since Ballard's press conference. Other than maybe the potential for Derek Carr to be available, possibly. Who knows? It doesn't seem like it's a clear and present danger yet, but you know, it's being floated out there that it's a possibility. Who knows what, if somebody wants to go there, that would add someone to the potential quarterbacks the Colts could end up with. It's somebody that I've thought would be a good fit for the Colts for a long time. I know there's a lot of people who want bigger fish, and they should try to get bigger fish if it's possible. But if they can't, I think his accuracy and his ability to get the ball out of his hands quickly really fits Frank Reich's offense perfectly. I don't know what it would take to get him. I don't know if it, how available he is, or if that's just one of the rumors that tends to spring up at this time of the year and then doesn't turn into anything. But outside of the Rodgers and Wilson potential, which I'm still skeptical that Green Bay is going to let Rodgers leave after seeing Jordan Love play. and I don't know what to think of Wilson. I'm still just kind of skeptical that maybe those two are even going to be available for anybody. But outside of those two, Carr is probably the one I like the most out of the rest of the options.
Yeah, I've essentially written off Rodgers, Watson, and Wilson for mostly I just don't think the Colts will be in that market. Or and with Watson, I don't think that's really on the table for many reasons. But Carr would be a little different if he actually is out there. I've remained skeptical on that because I'm a big Derek Carr fan. I think if you look, if someone's coming in, a GM and head coach, and they're looking at how to fix that team, I don't know why you would say, let's get rid of the guy who held this together and willed this team into the playoffs. I mean, that, like, it's a quarterback-driven league, and you have a guy who already has, like, 24 career come-from-behind victories, which is almost as many as Eli Manning's entire career, and saying, like, that guy's the problem, let's get rid of him. That would just be very dumb to me. But teams make dumb moves sometimes, and so I guess it's always possible. If he were to be out there, I still think the Colts are up against it because they don't have that first-round pick to dangle out there. So if there's a team like in a similar spot like the Browns who have the number 13 pick and the Raiders are trying to decide which offer do they take, it's just harder for the Colts to get up to there. But one thing that people have suggested that I just haven't pictured completely because I don't know how it would all fall out, but if you decided to start trading players from this Colts roster, if that was a part of your package because you say you can't get to the draft capital, you know, how many guys are available there, and does that change it? If they're willing to trade like a Darius Leonard or a Quentin Nelson, I mean, you can go so far down the rabbit hole here, but that's almost where I think the Colts probably have to go. If they really want to trade for someone who's going to be in high, high demand, I don't see how they're going to have the draft capital to do it unless they're just willing to hit a price using future draft picks that everyone else in the league's like, no, that's too much. So it's either they're going to overpay in future capital or they're going to have to go some other route, which is why I've always thought the more realistic option to me is a guy that may fall a tier below that, like Tua, if he ends up being available. And there's been different reports out there on whether he is or is not going to be their starter next year. I think it's more realistic they do another sort of, maybe that's considered a half measure, but to me it's more in their budget than, you know, a Derek Carr or the guys above that.
Yeah, I mostly just want to get out there that I like the fit. You put it out there with Tua last week. If I have a guy, I want to go with that. I'm going to go with that as a guy. Now, again, for anybody who's like, well, you should want Rodgers, everyone should want Rodgers. I just think that after Jordan Love played six quarters this season, if Rodgers asked them to renovate one side of Lambeau Field to make it look like, I don't know, his house or something, they almost have to do it. Because they, like, last year at this time, the Packers had the potential of Jordan Love. Like, maybe he can be the guy. Well, now they know he's not ready. And that gives Rodgers all the leverage. I know he has contract stuff. I'm going to tell you from experience, having covered the Saints, contracts suddenly have much smaller cap hits with extensions and stuff if a team wants to do that. It's very, very, it's not hard to do. Yeah. So I don't think that necessarily matters. I think the only thing that would keep, the only thing that gets Rodgers out of Green Bay is if he's completely 100% set on leaving Green Bay. And I don't think you can get any more like that than he was last summer. And last summer, the Packers had some reason to maybe think that if he moves on, they're fine. They cannot feel fine for next season based on what they've seen of Jordan Love this year. They just can't. So it's just hard for me to see Green Bay not just bending over backwards to do whatever he wants. Could be wrong. Who knows? Maybe Rodgers forces his way out. Outside of that, the quarterback picture is still sort of taking shape elsewhere. What's available, what's not available. I still feel like, and you said you put up a Twitter poll where it felt where most, like about half the people thought that Wentz would be back next year. That's not what I got out of last week's interviews.
No. Here, hold on. I'll show you what I put up a poll and I more or less said, I gave them four options and I basically said, let's assume that Rodgers, Wilson, and Watson are not on the table. So Derek Carr could have been one of those who is, but those top three guys are not. So I said, would you rather keep Wentz and find some options, draft a quarterback, sign a free agent, or trade for one? And it was 48% said keep Wentz and find options, 32% said trade for quarterback, and then 10% each for draft and sign a free agent. So almost 50% said, you know, just roll it back with Wentz and try and just get him better, basically get him the receivers he didn't have, get him a left tackle and all that. I see why fans are looking at it that way, but I'm right with you. I mean, you piece together everything that's been said and really what's not been said. And it's pretty obvious to me that at the very least, they're trying to move on from Carson Wentz. They're open, very open to moving on from Carson Wentz. Now, it's quite possible that it ends up, you know, that they exhaust some different avenues and they realize, like, hey, if we're going to pay this guy $15 million to be here and not be here, you know, and we can't find an upgrade, maybe they roll it back. But there's a lot of things in play here, and it's more than just evaluating what his play was on the field. It's evaluating kind of what his fit was on the team, and you know, and it's roping in things like his choice to not get the vaccine. Believe me, that matters to their owner. So we're not going to get a political discussion about that, but it matters to their owner. It mattered to their franchise. And late in the year, you know, there's certainly some questions over whether that played into how things fell apart. And it's all about kind of how do you rein this back in? And it's like, you know, they felt like they threw a lot. I know people, it's easy to look at this and say they could have given Carson more, and they could have. They could have given a better left tackle. They could have signed a better wide receiver. But as far as an environment to come to work and play in, I think they felt like they threw a lot at it. They made it the entire focus of their coaching staff. And I don't think they're very happy with really the trend of how it went out more than anything else. The fact that the end of the year was the worst part of it. You just add that all together. And it's like, what do you, if you go into this year, this is the reality of where they are, is that they can't afford another. I don't think they can afford another miss of the playoffs. There's too much talent on this team right now. And too many guys are going to have to get paid in the next couple of years to just go out there and say, we're just going to whiff and not have a passing game again. I mean, this is Frank Reich's area. This is the NFL. This is how you win the NFL, is getting a passing game. That's how this franchise has always won. So this is a very important decision for them. So it's all about what do they want to bank it all on again. And this year they banked it on a quarterback that their coaches were confident in, but who didn't end up performing that way down the stretch, and who wasn't available for practices down the stretch, and kind of left them nervous throughout the entire year of whether he'd be available at all at the end of the season. So a lot of this is going to come down to just the basic trust of what do we want to put our, you know, what basket do we want to put our eggs in if there's a chance we're going to get fired if it doesn't work. And I think the argument for Carson is getting worse and worse as time goes on.
I've just been operating on what this team has done in the past. And in 2019, it was a very similar situation. It really was. It was a quarterback who started out okay, had some good moments, but couldn't completely do it. And then tailed off towards the end of the season, despite having a really good running game. Now, Taylor is a different beast than Marlon Mack was in 2019. But the point remains, they had a very good running game that year. Everyone was up to stop it, and they should have been able to throw the ball down the field and couldn't. And I think that that's as damning as it can be. And in that situation, faced with that situation, despite the fact that Jacoby Brissett had a cap hit for the next year, and despite the fact that he was somebody the organization liked a ton, far honestly, with far more capital in the building than in terms of relationship building inside the building than Wentz does, they moved on. They went and got Phillip Rivers. I don't know what the answer is. I just know that the last time they were in this situation, they made a move and did whatever they had to do to make that move. So that's kind of how I've been operating. It's part of it is what they said, which is a lot of the same stuff they said when Brissett was there. And part of it is just we've seen this regime in this situation before, and they made a move.
Yeah, and one thing to keep in mind here is everyone that's looking at this, Colts fans specifically, they're judging Carson Wentz on 1 year. And there's a temptation to say, like, well, you know, why give up on it after 1 year? It's only been 1 year. Well, the coaching staff does not look at it that way. And the front office is not looking at it that way because Carson started 6 years in the league. And they feel like they have a very good grasp on what he's been for 6 years in this league. I mean, not only did Frank Reich coach him to start his career, but Mike Groh, their wide receivers coach, was his offensive coordinator for 2 years after that. Press Taylor, their quarterbacks or offensive consultant, was there as his quarterbacks coach. And what they're trying to figure out right now is whatever was missing from the passing game, and there clearly were things missing, can we fix that with this quarterback? Because he is going to be 30 years old. And can he do these things that he's – if we feel like he's not done them this year, is he going to do them next year? Is he going to, you know, is he going to take checkdowns? Is he going to, throw in a way that creates yak? Is he going to, you know, take advantage of when teams stack the box and consistently throw on limited reps? Like these, when we finally asked Chris Ballard that, like, can a guy fix that if he hasn't done it? Chris Ballard's answer was, we're working through that right now, which is not a lot of confidence. Okay, so to me, that's why I've been more on the I think I'm more open to drafting a quarterback than a lot of people are, because when I really listen back to what Chris Ballard is saying, he is really looking at the fact of, like, at some point when you get in the game, it's about who you are and how you've always played or how you know how to play. And he said one of his quotes was, you can drill it and drill it and drill it 1,000 times, but you get into the game, you're going to fall back on your habits.
On accuracy.
I think they saw that. They saw that with Carson. Now, with the rookie, you know, they can go and find specific traits in a specific style, but also they have a little bit more of a chance to train a 23-year-old who maybe, like, Malik Willis came from Liberty. Like, there's a growth path there. You know, Desmond Ridder, he's played a ton of college football, but he played in the American Conference. Like, there's some molding. There's more molding you can do there with those guys than. Got a guy at this point who started 6 years in the NFL. You either need to play his style or not at all. And it's just so interesting is that they chose him after Rivers, completely flipping the styles. And in some ways, they wanted that. They wanted more dynamic and explosive plays down the field. But they lost all the things I think they enjoyed with Rivers and who really maximized Frank Reich's playbook of these things about taking the check down and having good ball placement and creating yak and – you know, and it's just a tough decision they're in right now, and they can't whiff again. That's kind of the main thing, is that when fans are saying, oh, just roll it back, but like, they can't look at it that simply, because, you know, if they do that and it goes this way and they go 9-8 again, they may not be here to figure it out after that.
Yeah, there was some talk during the season that this may have been an evaluation year for the Colts, given their approach in free agency, or I should say lack thereof, their lack of approach in free agency, going with some of the younger guys, kind of running it back a little bit. I think that the owner's reaction to the way the season ended tells you it wasn't an evaluation year. But if it's an evaluation, you don't react the way Jim Irsay reacted. You just don't. And I don't know. I wonder too if maybe talking about that was a mistake, just because is there such thing as an evaluation year in today's NFL anymore? I don't know that there is, because the way people fired and the way owners move on and regimes move on, you can't afford to have anything like this season happen. So yeah, they've got to win, and they know they've got to win. That's been the message from everybody since the season, Irsay to Ballard to Reich. That's been the message, and so they're gonna have to do whatever it takes to do that. And if they think they're not gonna have a passing game, which you can't just run the ball. That was the story I wrote today. Is that they tried because they couldn't trust Wentz. They tried to just run the ball because they didn't feel like they could trust Wentz, and the offense bogged down in the last five games of the season. I know they won the New England game and the Arizona game and the Houston game, but there were periods in all of those games the offense wasn't moving the football because they couldn't get the passing game going at all. And they got masked by big plays at the end or by a special team touchdown against New England, but four of their five games under 300 yards were in that stretch. And they can't do that again. If they can't do that again and expect to they can't expect to win the division next year, which I think is probably that's where the goal starts for the Colts is winning the division. And I don't think you can expect to win the division if you can't throw the ball and you have to run it 60% of the plays. They were at 56% in the last five games. The only teams that have done that over a full season in the last 10 years are the Lamar Jackson Ravens, which doesn't really count because of the quarterback, and the 2018 Seahawks, which led to the changing of their coordinators. So it's just not sustainable at this point, at this time in the NFL.
Well, it's not sustainable, and also what does it say about the quarterback that you gave up a first-round pick for, who's in his sixth season, and your trust of him to run a passing offense? Like, these guys are not like, these are not old school coaches who just like run the ball because like that's how they want to establish the run. I mean, Marcus Brady and Frank Reich are former quarterbacks. They'd love to throw the ball if that's what was there. They've got to be able to win. That's the main thing Ballard kept saying, is you've got to be able to win both ways sometimes. And they want some games with the run game. But how many games do you look at and you're like, yep, the passing game carried them on a day when it wasn't working otherwise? Like, maybe you can say that about Arizona. I still think that Arizona game, that was more about kind of the low-scoring aspect of that game and how many points Arizona left on the field. And Carson led a couple great drives, and they made some plays. But, like, that wasn't like a – that still wasn't – if that's your banner day for a passing game, that isn't quite there. One thing I would say is you said, you know, can you afford an evaluation year? Mostly you can't. I'd say unless you're in the first year of a build. And actually the one team that did it pretty perfectly was the Eagles. Like, they made an evaluation year on Jalen Hurts. They traded Carson Wentz. They said, we'll let you go. We'll see how this goes. They made the playoffs, and they just came out today and said, he's our starter for next season. So that worked. What's different, though, is that's a first-year head coach and a team that traded its quarterback for picks. Like, the Colts are in a much – when you trade a first-round pick to get a quarterback, that is a tougher time to pull off an evaluation year. Like, I mean – the Rams traded two first-round picks for Matthew Stafford, and it's going to feel like a failure if they don't get to the Super Bowl. So the stakes do raise at a certain point in time, and that's just kind of where they're at right now. And one thing I want to ask you, Joel, is when Chris came and he said that he did not regret the Wentz trade at the time, do you believe him, or do you think he's kind of masking it at this point? I do think he looks back right now and says, yeah, I would go back and do the trade again the same way.
That's a good question. I think he feels comfortable with the price. Just because I've said this before on the podcast, but he's very aware of what the historical precedent was for trades. That's where it starts. But I don't know. I mean, obviously he's not, if they're going to move on from Wentz, which is what I think both of us think they're going to do, I don't think he feels great about it now. You know, I just looking back at that time, I think part of what he's saying is just back at that time, it really felt like and seemed like Wentz was the best option available. Stafford was off the table. It really, the conversation came down to Wentz or Sam Darnold. And as much as I've said the passing game, we both said the passing game didn't work. Sam Darnold was way worse this season.
That wouldn't have
fixed it. Or it's like Andy Dalton or somebody like that who also had a pretty bad year with Chicago. They didn't know at the time. I feel like the Colts believed that they didn't have a shot at Justin Fields or one of those quarterbacks. I don't think they thought that Fields was going to be at 11. That's a team that really, really evaluated Fields highly in the draft. And I think they evaluated him in a way where they thought there's no way that team let this guy passed, especially once you start thinking about like teams in that top 10 who did pass on him, you know, Denver, Carolina, like these are quarterback needy teams that looking back on it, their fan base is like to be mad that they didn't take him. So yeah, there's, I think that's what he's trying to say more than anything. It's just at the time, it really seemed like Wentz was the best option. He paid a price that I think he feels like fits with historically what it costs to get a player of his profile. But I don't think he doesn't feel good about where their passing game is or where their franchise is right now. So I think there's some real mixed, I think it's a real mixed bag there. Because
right.
The hard part is knowing what I know now, if I hadn't done that with Wentz, if I had Justin Fields on my team, maybe.
If you had Justin Fields on your team and you went 9-8 and the passing game faltered down the stretch, you'd say, well, he's a rookie quarterback, like it'll be better. Right. What you're concerned about is how can you say that about a guy who's turned 30? I've thought about this and I think he's mostly telling the truth there. I think when he looks back, he thought, you know, I wanted to get a quarterback that my coaching staff felt like they could get the best out of, because at one point in time they did get the best out of him. And it just didn't get there. But that was the best shot we had at the time. The one thing I would think, if we gave him truth serum, I wonder what he would say on is, what if you went back to that point, you laid out, you had the compensation, you had the agreement with Philadelphia, but you told Carson, in order for us to do this trade, you need to get the vaccine. I wonder if they think about that, because we know it bothered Jim Irsay. We know it became a big distraction and something they're thinking about now with the way the season went. And it's like, if Carson at the time had said no then, it's like, well, then can we be all in if you're not all in? Like, I just wonder how that would have played out, because I just don't think they thought about that. They thought about everything that he could do on the field. They thought about everything about, like, the draft compensation. Was the price worth it? What are, like, all of that. They thought through so many things, but that part was always lingering out there. And I'd say I think it became a problem.
Yeah, it's hard for me to guess just because so many of their leaders ended up being unvaccinated, you know. But I guess you're not going to get rid of guys who are already on the team. So maybe that does play a role. I have no idea. It's also hard to think about, like, that trade was agreed to in February. I don't remember what we thought the NFL was going to do with that. I don't remember.
That's where maybe he does feel like they did the best with what they knew too, but it is just interesting to me that kind of hung out there all season long for a guy they went kind of all in on. So not to make this too vaccine heavy, but I think that's kind of what they're sifting through here when they kind of look back on how this whole thing unfolded. Was, you know, there were some signs early on that this had a, you know, maybe a lower floor than maybe people realized.
Yeah, and the weird thing is they might have actually gotten the best out of Wentz. That might be the best he can play anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't turn the ball over a ton. He didn't take nearly as many sacks per pass attempt as I thought he was going to take. I think it's possible that I think everyone's always known that the 2017 version of Wentz disappeared with Torres ACL. And there's an argument out of him, and it's just realizing now that that's the best. It's just not good enough for this team at all.
And yeah, he threw 27 touchdowns and 7 picks and won 9 games. That is exactly what he did back in 2019.
Yeah.
And that was 2020 was so bad. But I don't know that they think about it that way. Like, I don't know that they made the trade saying we need the 2019 Wentz. Maybe they did. I feel like part of them, though,
they weren't counting
the best in people. So
I can tell you for a fact that they weren't counting on 2017 Wentz. I know for a fact that they weren't thinking about him as the 2017 version. They were thinking about getting him back to the 18 or 19 version.
Yeah. I mean, 2018 was pretty darn good, too. 2019 is where it started to become more of what we see this year, which is, you know, there's some good and there's some bad, and you can work with it, but it's not elite. I mean, that's kind of how it felt.
But I think the thing that maybe they didn't realize was just that some of the stuff that they got from his physical tools wasn't going to outweigh the stuff that they lost. I think they probably thought that, like, some of the stuff that he's not good at or doesn't find is stuff that I feel like maybe a coach is like, I just don't understand why you're not doing it. Like taking a check down or the open crosser. The fact that he had a whole season with, I'm sure, Reich in the room telling him, why didn't you throw it there? And it never, and he only got worse at it. I think maybe makes it more of a stark realization that it's not going to work. Just they can't have enough like big time stuff just to have that. I apologize if listeners can hear my kids. They're not supposed to be in here. You can take them out.
We're all good with cameos. Yeah, well, the other thing that I keep saying that Frank Reich keeps bringing up is it's almost like they knew Jonathan Taylor was really good. I don't think they knew that they were going to lead the league in rushing by 500 yards. And if they knew that, then it kind of changes the type of bar you have for the passing game and what it actually needs to do and what it needs to avoid. And, like, a lot of the things they lost with Carson, you know, as far as, like, you know, as far as throwing for yak and for, you know, checking it down to running backs and for just converting on limited reps, like, a lot of that stuff, I think they can teach certain guys to do. And maybe you can't teach them to extend the play Carson Wentz, you know, as well as he does. Maybe you can't teach them to have the arm that Carson Wentz does. But for the stuff that was missing this year, I feel like they feel confident they could train someone else to do that. It's all the stuff that Derek Carr masters, which is why I agree with you. He'd be a great fit if they could ever get him. But it's a lot of stuff. You know, Derek Carr was also a second-round pick. It's stuff that they feel like I don't want to say put words in their mouth, but I think they could train a quarterback to do that out of the draft. And that's why I think the draft is much more realistic option than maybe some people realize, given the fact that they don't have a first-round pick.
Well, it'll make for an interesting offseason, at the very least, in terms of what goes on from here. Nate's going to be at the Senior Bowl in a couple of weeks to get a kickstart on the draft quarterbacks. I don't have many opinions on the draftable quarterbacks right now other than what I saw in games I watched. And that's a very, very imprecise reading of scouting. So I'm not going to give any of them out. You'll have a better chance after talking to people down there in Mobile in a couple of weeks. We're still rolling out stuff. We're still rolling out stuff from Chris Ballard's hour and 4 minutes press conference. There's a lot of topics addressed in there. I have a story on the wide receivers that just went up. But keep an eye on the star. We're gonna try to blanket this offseason as much as possible. Right now, keep an eye on the coaching searches. If Matt Eberflus gets a head coaching job, I think that's a bigger alteration in this offseason than maybe I thought was going to happen when the season first ended. So for the Colts Cover 2 podcast, this is Joel Erickson and Nate Atkins. We will talk to you guys next week.